You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Bob, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you. And I'm telling you, looking out my window this morning, it is all gray. I can see the big fir trees along the edge of Marine Drive. And beyond that, it's just gray. Slight drizzle. 7 degrees. So how's that for a full report to start off with?
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll put a silver lining in today's weather as we have a question or two from Michael. His first question concerns silver. Hi, Bob and Jim. Zero Hedge headline, everyone's grandma is selling the silver chandelier forks knives as scrap volumes overwhelm refiners. Bob, I'm confused. Financial pundits have reported that people are hoarding silver as a safe haven and that the price will reach $400 an ounce in the near future. Now we find that everyday people, especially grandmas, are selling their silver eating utensils and chandeliers. Bob, is this a sign of a silver top, a consumer credit crisis, or dementia?
That is really good. My guess on the Zero Hedge headline, everyone's grandma's selling, the numbers wouldn't be available on that yet. I think the headline guy was just having some fun with the headline, and you're knowing when you're getting straight-up action that eventually, you know, that thing. But I think that I look at it as your basic silver bug, and he can be retail or a professional advisor or whatever, they dwell on supply-demand. And they know that every year there is more silver used than is mined. Therefore, there's a shortage, and therefore it is going to go up every year. But I like to point out, there's also an important financial pressures on silver. And yeah, we've had a great market for silver and gold, perhaps getting a little overdone. And but here's the thing, is that silver is going to break at some time. Like the serious break, and we don't know exact until it's happening. And that silver heading down would mark the beginning of a post-bubble contraction, when we have been in the greatest financial bubble in history. The last one was 1929, and before that 1873, and it all goes back to the first one, the South Sea Bubble of 1720. Now, all of these great financial speculations have been the biggest thing at the time. So we are now have the greatest financial bubble. And it's an everything bubble. I mean, everything is going up. And so, but if you're looking at history, you know what the result is going to be. It's just very difficult to nail down as to when the turn happens. We've had a break. Does the next leg up go to new highs? We're uncertain at this point. But at any rate, silver, when it does break down fully, that would be indicating that the financial party is over. And the other one that is reliable in this department is the short interest rates. Well, we use the 3 month or 6 month Treasury bill, and it sets a high with the big boom, and then the rates decline. Now you have this exquisite irony out there where the street has been excited in anticipating some Fed cuts. They got this idea that Fed sets interest rates, but no, it's changes in market rates of interest that force the Fed's hand. So, the two things that we're watching are the short rates, and their short rates are really declining, which says that the boom is going to fail. Whereas the popular view out there is that the Fed is going to cut interest rates and the party will continue. No, in 1929, in June, the three-month bill was a little around 5%, say. And then the Fed didn't cut its interest rate, its administered rate, until the end of that October when the crash was fully underway. And the interest rate, the T-bill rate, went down to 0.08% in 1932. So silver going down and T-bill rates going down is a good way to determine whether the boom is over. And let's say that it's as good as over, and we just have to see how it all works out. On our work and the stock market thing, we expected things to be okay to good times in the first quarter, which we are getting. So we'll just see how this burst of speculation goes in here now. And but I'm convinced that it is setting up that for the end of the bubble, and typically bubbles are followed by great depressions, and people do not want to talk about a great depression, but it's possible. That's the way these things are scheduled. After the big financial party, you go into a long contraction. So, yep.
Another question from Michael for Bob. The yen carry trade is collapsing, but the markets are still holding up. China is in a deflationary spiral, and Europe is in a severe recession. The U.S. dollar is still being shorted, and consumer indebtedness is near all-time highs. In terms of market valuations, investors are quite complacent. Bob, are the equity markets now considered the new safe haven?
Hey, you can write some paragraphs for my letter. This is good stuff. Equity is the new safe. Well, they're considered bulletproof, let's put it this way. And there are charts that show that the retail investor is in and enthused. And let's put it this way, the retail investor is not known for buying at bottoms. That's real pros that have the gumption to buy at a bottom. And it's, the retail comes in at major, close to major highs. So, yeah, this is a dangerous sign.
So when the mom-and-pop people, it's the old, when people are talking about it at the proverbial cocktail party, except now it may be gummies, is they're saying, do you have your Bitcoin? Because I remember at a birthday party, going, oh, you got to get the Bitcoin. And the next day it lost, it was at $13,000 and it lost $6,000. And we've seen Bitcoin go up to $124,000. Now it's in the $60,000 range. Is that a time to buy the dip?
Yeah, it is. The saying is like trying to grab a falling knife by the handle. Very, very risky to do. And my colleague Ross Clark is a very good technician, and we just know that on this one you want to have signs that it is washed out, and then look for the entry point, which we try to know. Yeah, so this is a very good question. Yeah. And silver, of course, is driven by the silver bugs, and they look at the shortages, and they don't look at the financial history when silver then becomes the leading indicator on the end of the bubble. So, and then you mentioned the Bitcoin stock. The high-tech stocks have been the feature of the great bubbles in 1720 South Sea Bubble. One of the stocks floated was they'd come up with a new way of making sailcloth. Oh, you had to have it. So then in the 1873 bubble, telegraph.
I was going to say telegraph, yeah.
Yeah, was the big thing. And then... in that crash, it gave up something like 40% in the fall of 1873, gave up 40% in a week's time. So when these things fail, they fail disastrously. So,
in the early 1900s, wasn't the failure railroads? Everybody thought you have to build a railroad. You got to expand in the West. Because in Downton Abbey, that's where he lost all of his money, was in railroads.
Right. Yeah. You had, first of all, the turnpike roads were an investor's speculation going way back. And then you had canals. And on a road, the pack horse could carry 250 pounds. And then when you got to a canal, you had one horse that could pull a barge that could carry, say, maybe 30 tons. So the advantage, was really wonderful. And then you had the problem with canals in the summertime. Sometimes there wasn't enough water. In the wintertime, the problem could be ice. And then along came the railroad. And with the steam engine, and that was just so superior to canals. And then you had the railroad stocks, and that's where after the crash, a crash in the railroad stocks, where Vanderbilt said that it was foolishness to be building railroads from nowhere to nowhere. And so you had the mania in canal stocks, then the mania in railroad stocks, and then later on, I guess you probably had airlines and transportation and manias and everything now. And it's the same action. Eventually, the last buyer's in, and there's nobody to take it any higher. It's as simple as that. And then they go down, so...
Now, my question is, timing the market, is that a sucker's game, trying to guess when it's going to peak and then bail, or should you be quietly withdrawing cash right now, knowing at some point it's going to come down, and then if it drops or corrects, get back in?
Yeah, lightening up in here, taking money off the table would be a very wise move. You may not get the top trade, but that's all right. You end up with liquidity at a time when, and in a bust, liquidity disappears. Mm-hmm. So, and if you're liquid, oh, it's great. And then comes the time on a major cyclical low is then the time to reengage, and that takes a lot of gumption to sit in there and collect very low price stocks because you're worried that, it could go down another 10% or something like that. It's both ends of a big play are difficult to play.
Well, Warren Buffett quite some time ago went to cash. And he's the master of, you know, doing what you're supposed to do, sell high and buy low.
Individual stocks were getting quite pricey, and he was somehow disposing of them and ended up with a lot of cash. And he works on valuations. Mm. And when the valuations are insane, there was also the Dow Theory guy was Richard Russell. And he made quite a name for himself on the Dow Theory, making the calls, and he'd get written up in Barron's and all that sort of stuff. And his line was at a market high, was that stocks are going to go to great valuations. So at a market high, traditionally, the Dow Jones dividend yield was 3%. And then in a disaster, prices down, and it would be traded a 6% dividend yield. Well, of course, now your dividends are not part of the play, but it is very pricey. But I love the line that stock prices are going to go to great valuations, meaning down to a 6% dividend yield where you could accumulate them. Yeah, there's throughout the history of the financial markets, there's some very good sayings.
And, of course, there's a 50% chance of your prediction being right. Well, the market's going to go up or it's going to go down.
The trick is when and what direction. So, but just to wrap it up, Jim, we are in the greatest financial bubble in history. As a matter of fact, they're calling this one a new era for the financial markets. Now, the term new gives it away. There have been previous new eras. Age of the great financial bubbles. So somebody is probably saying this is a new financial era. And then in 1928, John Moody of Moody's wrote this incredible article about just that, that with the federal scientific backing of the Federal Reserve, the risks had been eliminated. And while it was August 1928 when that was published, I think in Atlantic Monthly, the stock market high was set in that fateful September of 1929, and all was well, and then it just started to erode, and the heavy pressures were noticed, you know, late September. So they can the tide can change very quickly on these things, Jim. But we just sit here and watch the party and very, very impressed with it.
Well, one of the features of today's market is bots. Robots are doing the trading. And so in a nanosecond, in a billionth of a second, they can decide, oh, this is a downturn, sell. And then that just fuels a panic that can happen instantly.
Legitimate comment where somebody had tried this AI trading. And it was, and in a week or so, it made them a very nice return. Mm-hmm. So AI is beyond me. But I did see a legit article where a trading program AI driven was working. So you don't know how long that's going to last.
And of course, with this, with billions, trillions of dollars being poured into AI right now. Some of those companies, most of those companies won't be successful. That's been the history of high tech or any invention. At the turn of the century when the automobile was invented, there were thousands of manufacturers, then hundreds, and now planet-wide we're down to just a few dozen.
Yeah, well, this is how it became known as General Motors.
Yeah.
Durant just kept taking over all the little other producers and ended up being General Motors, and Ford built 15 million Model T Fords.
Just one car in any color you want, as long as it's black.
Black. And then Edsel Ford, his son, realized that, hey, this, we played this long enough, and he had quite a struggle with the elder Ford about changing it. But anyways, Edsel insisted, and they came up with then with the Model A, which was tremendously improved over the Model T. So
you
did have a Model A Ford at one time, and I enjoyed it. It was an interesting car. Hmm.
Bob, we'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught your eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye. Let's go to Cuba, where the Drudge Report says, no oil, no lights, few flights. Cuba is a very dark place. And also from Zero Hedge, Russian airlines suspend flights to Cuba, begin evacuation of citizens over fuel crisis. And this is all sparked by the U.S. blockade of Venezuelan oil to Cuba.
Yeah. And it's not allowing even the Russians to help out with Cuba. We saw what happened with Maduro, and he was given a chance to get out with money, like $25 million, and live in Russia, and he didn't go for it. So then the U.S. under Trump took him out, and I think the other tin pot dictators are getting the idea, and just to, you know, be reasonable. So, but Cuba was under the thumb of authoritarian Spain, and they had the revolution, of which Castro was important, and it ends up being an authoritarian communist government. So I'm telling you, the people in the Cubans are owed a whole lot of freedom, and I believe that they will get it this time.
The Russians in no position to counter the U.S. if the United States decides to come visit and stay.
Yep. Yeah. Trump is making sure that the Americas, North America, Central America, and South America are isolated and protected from the craziness going on in Europe or Southeast Asia, wherever. So it's going to be interesting. Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Also, Canadian Airlines, Air Transat, Air Canada, WestJet, they've all canceled flights to Cuba, and they are now bringing all their tourists back home.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So this.
Yeah. Well, not getting any oil, it's shutting everything down. But at some point, I think they're going to throw off the authoritarian post-Castro government and end up with something much more democratic.
Mm-hmm. Now, another headline for us from Zero Hedge. French wine spirits exports sink to 20-year low as demand sours.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, a demand for wine sours. I like the headline. Yeah, yeah. So, and then, of course, you have the issue that California is making some very fine vintages of wine, very fine stuff, and the French have been upset about that for a long time. So I like the headline.
Well, the U.S. booze sector is taking it on the chin because most Canadian provinces are not buying U.S. liquor products. So many of the whiskey makers in Tennessee are going under because Canada was their biggest customer. California vineyards are struggling because Canada was their biggest customer.
Yeah.
So when there's a trade war, I guess it's the only way Canadians can get back is just don't buy those products.
By Premier Ford, the Premier of Ontario, and he's I think he's a loose nut, that guy. He spent more than $20 million on a special video that he put together condemning the U.S. And this is what, and he wants to do it, keep a good deal going with the U.S. No, the Ford, Premier Ford is a madman, so, in the sense of an angry man, and also mad as well. So, yeah.
Well, he doesn't want to sell Crown Royal, which is made in Gimli, Manitoba.
He's beating up on Canadians in order to take his spite out about Trump. It's all anti-Trump syndrome, just whatever. So, but hey, it wins elections in Ottawa. Or downtown Ottawa, downtown Toronto, and downtown Montreal, and that sets the elections for the whole of the country. It's ridiculous.
And speaking of weather here, Vancouver may squeak through this. First time in 43 years, we haven't had snow over winter, although there may be some snow flurries Monday morning for about 3 hours, and then it's back to rain.
Yeah, we've been milder than usual, and parts of the snowpack I heard in the radio this morning are okay, but there's many areas where it's just not the snowpack. But hey, this is just early February. I remember 1 year at Whistler, in March they got 10 feet of snow, and the weather was only stormy for the first 2 weeks, so who knows, there could be quite a bit of precipitation come in yet.
Plants think it's springtime. Flowers are blooming here in New Westminster along Quayside Drive along the river.
Oh, yeah, my daughter's home down in Kitsilano. Her garden, she says, is pushing up crocuses and things like that. Whereas I looked out, we have nice grounds in the condo tower I'm in, and out towards the sidewalk, and there's a pleasant patch of garden there, and the little crocuses are up but not blossoming here. So I think it's a little cooler out on Point Grey.
Well, there must be some spring in the air because my allergies are acting up. That's the best indicator there.
Fortunately, I don't have any of those.
Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Yeah, Jim, we had a good time today and look forward to getting together next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.